You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It's Thursday, June 4th, 2020. I'm Michael Brooks on a Michael Thursday. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We're broadcasting live. Depths. Sort of. Quasi. Depths. From the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America. Downtown Brooklyn, USA on today's program. Wozni Lambre, Big Woz. Journalist, analyst, commentator for The Athletic and the Count the Dings Network. We're talking about the police viciousness that we've seen over the last several days, the protests and uprisings across the United States, how this fits with the bigger story of American democracy. Can we ever get there? What will it take? What does this have to do with structural inequality, capital, and more? Big Woz, Wozni Lambre. Millions of Americans have skipped payments as a tidal wave of defaults and evictions loom. The head of the Minnesota AFL-CIO has called for that police union's president, the police union president, Bob Kroll, to resign after his basically totally blasé comments about killing people while being a cop. Violence across the country, footage of just these brutal police assaults in New York City, reports that those arrested demonstrating are being asked about affiliations to Antifa. Talk to an attorney, folks. In Washington, D.C., military deployments, nonviolent protests, and security forces apparently deployed by Bill DeBar that aren't identifying themselves. Do they work for ICE? Are they mercenaries, paramilitaries? We don't know. Brazil eases restrictions on the coronavirus, even as deaths reach their highest point. And we had over 1,000 deaths from coronavirus, I believe, yesterday in the United States. Senator Tom Cotton takes to the pages of the New York Times, calling for sending the troops into American cities. Well, Jim Mattis, look up his Iraq record, please, folks. But he has released a blistering statement on Donald Trump, which will not help with the normie vote. Joe Biden has opened up an 11-point lead, and a new poll shows a split in trust in law enforcement, which might seem obvious as they're shooting rubber bullets at journalists, but is potentially, if it sustains, a radical shift in polling. Memorial services for the retired cop who was murdered in front of a pawn shop in St. Louis happening. And jobless claims, another 1.877 million Americans file for unemployment benefits. Over 42 million have sought benefits since COVID-19, even as testing sites are closing across the country, including the vindictive closing of testing sites by LA Mayor Garcetti. All that and much, much more on today's Majority Report. We had a little bit of a technical hiccup out of the gates, everybody, but here we are. in full force. Matt, Brendan, how are you guys doing?
I'm all right.
Doing all right.
Doing all right.
I didn't sleep terribly well last night for all the helicopters flying overhead, but
yeah, helicopters flying overhead is just definitely to use the parlance as a new normal in New York City.
I'll trade you an ambulance for a helicopter, police helicopter. How about that?
Right. I mean, you hear them all, actually. I had the air conditioner on just to drown out the siren, just constant bullshit from the cops.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Good use of funds.
Very good use of funds. So, I mean, basically, we're seeing a lot here, obviously. There's an issue of policing and an issue of policing in poor communities, an issue of policing in terms of racism, in terms of lethality and murder, in terms of actually the killology, which is one of the training schools that some police have been through, many police have been through. And this wave of murders culminating in George Floyd, right? Have what we know is not a democracy. There's no democratic accountability for policing in communities of color, in poor communities, in a vast set, you know, just the amount of lethal force that police use in the United States is abnormal, stunning, sickening, terrifying, and anti-democratic. We've seen over the last week that a lot of local politicians clearly do not have control over their police departments. Bill de Blasio in New York is pathetic and obsequious to the police. But we're also talking about people who, at least some of whom, doxed his daughter while she was protesting. And he still has not condemned, in spite of endless examples of brutality, including driving through the crowd in Flatbush, which he actually justified. So, and now what we're seeing, and I think what we particularly saw last night, and we'll play a couple of clips, we've been seeing all along, but it was very accelerated last night, because now they're going after and, you know, just beating people essentially at random. This footage from Denver of a car being stopped, guy saying, "Hey, I'm just trying to get home." They shoot rubber bullets at him and his pregnant wife.
Not even protesting.
Not even protesting. Literally just going about their business. Says, "Hey, stop." They fire rubber bullets at them. And then these clips that we're about to see in New York, this is a collective punishment for talking, for protesting about these issues, not talking about these issues. This is a collective punishment. So these are some scenes. Let's play clips 1 and 2. This is first some footage compiled by, I guess both of these are compiled by Josh Fox, yeah? Of some of the just endless things that happened in New York last night. I'd also recommend people should, Jumaane Williams, the New York Public Advocate, if you look at his Twitter feed, he was out. As a high-ranking city.
Responding to that, too.
Sorry?
We have Jumaane talking to the press after during last night as well.
Why don't we play that? Let's play these two pieces of brutality, and then let's play Jumaane responding. And the reasons really to underline is that, you know, again, they feel so comfortable. In the first couple of days, they actually maced the you know, pepper sprayed a state senator and a city councilwoman. They didn't touch the public advocate, but they did this all in front of him, even as he was documenting it in real time on social media.
We don't have sound, by the way.
Oh, okay, I thought there was sound for this. Sorry. So basically, this first clip is a guy who's biking home. I don't know the context, but he appears to just be crossing an intersection. You know, some people... There's obviously a lot of people defying the curfew to nonviolently protest because the curfew is a major dangerous encroachment on
8 p.m. in New York City.
Yeah, 8 p.m. in New York City. Those are just a lot of people doing work. regardless, it's authoritarian and insane. So this guy just is biking. They go up on him, start smacking him with a billy club.
Oh my God.
And pull him off the bike, start beating him. You can hear that, oh my God, the woman in the car.
You know, Matt Iglesias had this piece that where he's like, technocratically, if Trump waited until after the curfew, he could have gassed them more, you know, with more impunity, right? And that might be true. Like, people might accept that breaking curfew can trigger a police response up to a point, maybe. But if this curfew has to extend for a long time and people are just getting beaten for being outside, that's not going to age well for the cops. Like, and I think part of their brutality is because they're having to call every, there's no days off. Guys working long shifts, 12-hour shifts,
no
days
off now. Yeah.
This is, the police forces are exhausted. So especially the NYPD, they want to end this shit now.
Yep.
And so that's why they're trying to scare people from going out. And yeah, like this is part of it too, right? I'm convinced that part of the reason they're comfortable doing this is because they don't mind these images of people getting beaten just for being outside, because they want to scare people from being outside.
Absolutely. No, this is as much a PR. They're not in the we're actually cuddly phase of the PR tactic. Now it's the we don't respect basic tenets of a democracy. We'll beat the shit out of you. Sorry, Brendan, go ahead.
The SBA letter about winning the war in New York.
No.
Yeah.
I'll pull this up.
Psycho. I mean, the Sergeant Benevolence Association is a complete psycho fascist organization. Just and have been for.
And in LA, I mean, you had a senior police official say, look, you know, these curfews going to last as long as protests are happening. So that is a public admission that you're getting rid of the First Amendment. You're attempting to get rid of the First Amendment. Mm-hmm. And again, let's just be really, you know, let's just be clear about the tactics and what's happening here. A vast majority of people that are doing this are protesting nonviolently. They could be defying a curfew. They could be holding up traffic. That is exactly in the tradition that everybody likes to valorize until it actually happens. The other stuff, just talking about tactically, is minuscule relative to people not protesting by, say, throwing a brick at a window. And we have seen numerous reports of police allowing some degree of vandalism and looting to happen and then charging at a broadly democratically participating crowd. In addition to other bizarre pieces of, and I feel less comfortable. I've seen anecdotes of this. The first one I've seen enough to say pretty comfortably, but I've seen enough to at least put in the air that sometimes, you know, I wonder why there's footage of guys in SWAT gear breaking a CVS window in different places. It looks odd to me.
We know, and I've seen
that several times.
We know police forces lie and we know they plant evidence. What would they do if they thought they were at war against people?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we had that, what was it, Rolex? They said, you know, hey, they went in, they stole $2 million worth of Rolex watches, these looters. And Rolex was like, we didn't have anything on display. you guys have this letter?
One moment.
Okay, so it's just very important to understand that this is now starting from the top with Trump. This is all about a full chilling effect and anti-democratic movement, period. That's it. That's the bottom line. And whatever else, I mean, you know, there's and critique and analysis and everything is important. If they succeed at this, this is a chilling effect on any type of constructive action you ever want. Mm-hmm. Labor action. You know, ensuring a clean election. You name it. They're policing ideology. And now they're quite literally, I mean, in front of everybody, like, don't let anybody kind of like overhype you with like, well, technically, you know, you can protest during the day and blah, 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 blah. They are taking actions to undermine democracy in substance. And that's what all of this goes back to, that there is not democratic accountability in the police department to begin with. That's what this all goes back to. This is going to be democratized or not. Dear fellow sergeants, when was this released?
This was like over the weekend, I think.
All right. 31st, I think. Yeah.
Dear fellow sergeant, I'm being inundated with calls, text messages, and pleading for help. Please know that I'm reading each and every correspondence I receive. I want each of you to know that I'm very much aware of everything that's occurring in our city. I know we're losing our city. We have no leadership, no direction, no plan. I know we're being held back and used as pawns. I understand. I'm one of you. I am doing and will continue to do everything I can to protect the people of the city. So I'm asking you to please stay together and stay strong. Hold the line. Protect each other. Stand shoulder to shoulder. Do not give up. Never give up. I hear you. I am aware. And soon everyone's going to hear you. Help is coming. We will win the war in New York City. Remember, you work for a higher authority. It's good against evil, and good always wins.
Yep.
Okay, this is fucking demented. And this is not like, look, police want to come out and say, hey, we're tired. Hey, we're trying, like, we have a job to do, you know, like, fine. Those are absolutely valid sentiments for them to express. You have people who have basically zero legal account, essentially immunity, do whatever they want with all types of gadgets and gear, and they think they're fighting good versus evil because people are out protesting some of their brethren murdering somebody. That's a psycho and dangerous mindset. And it's very interesting because everybody is approvingly quoting General Mattis saying the United States is not a battlefield. I'd like to add Fallujah shouldn't have been a battlefield anyways, but I won't get lost in that. But everybody's saying finally General Mattis has come forward and correctly attacked Donald Trump for being a narcissistic dullard that's assaulting the Constitution. All that's true. Why is it acceptable that we have people who represent an empowered paramilitary force that could have such an insane mindset? I mean, this also calls for, when you talk about questions of training, you need to measure, like, are you reading ridiculous conspiracy theory websites? Are you, like, what is going in your head? If we can applaud the general for telling the president that the United States is not a battlefield, then every elected official in the country needs to tell these police associations that their cities are not a battlefield, and people protesting and demanding basic democracy and civil rights and accountability are not evil. Oh. Let alone that they're empowered to engage in collective punishment. All right, folks. That went long, obviously. So we will get, I'm assuming we're not going to take a break. We'll just get directly to Waz.
Yeah, we'll bring Waz on now.
All right, cool. Joining us now, very happy. Waz and I, obviously, Waz is featured often on the Michael Brooks Show. We co-host the show for the bomb feed on the Count the Dings Network, but he hasn't been on the Majority Report for a while, so I'm very happy to have him back. And Waz is also a writer for The Athletic. He co-hosts a great podcast with David Aldridge called Hoops Adjacent. Best podcast. I love that podcast. That's such a good podcast. And also you can just find the Count the Dings Network puts out a lot of content on politics, pop culture, and of course sports, and Waz is all over it. Waz, thanks so much for doing this, man. How are you?
Hey, man. I'm good. You know, it's 9:30 in the morning on the West Coast, and this happened to be a night that I actually got some sleep. So I feel bad for getting sleep before Majority, bro. I'm usually up by 7 o'clock. Like, it's hard to get a sleep pattern in like the times that we're living in, because everything seems so like, I don't know. So everything has been thrown off, and then, you know, we throw this time of unrest on top of a pandemic, on top of a renegade presidency, on top of just so many things. But I'm happy to be on with you guys. Matt Leck, man. Yo, Matt, that video you posted of those cops planting bricks so that they're freaking agent provocateurs could find them. I'm from New York City. I'm used to being appalled by the cops. And that still, like, got me. I was like, what in the hell, bruh?
Yeah. We should note, police sources are saying they were just picking up debris. So, which is something that I think the cops do.
Wow. This is a video. I don't know if you have it, but basically of them, like, placing bags of bricks on a corner.
There's a couple videos. There's a video with there's a bunch of pallets of bricks that have been showing up, and people are kind of like wondering what's going on. And so people in Boston saw some cops in an alley, and they pulled like the back of the cab. I forgot all my truck terms, but looking in the back of the truck, and there's a whole bunch of bricks underneath the mat. And then there's also in Brooklyn yesterday, Matt Binder was on this. New York Police Commissioner Shea tweeted out this video of these cops finding these like bricks just neatly stacked in these boxes on this corner in way South Brooklyn, like close to like Coney Island. And Binder pointed out, like, yeah, no protests are even near this area or scheduled for it. But the cops were there on the case and with video to film them picking up these. Like, I guess the anarchists have gotten really coordinated and they've bought a bunch, went to the crate factory or whatever you get to package up their stuff really nice. But
it was, it was like a 60s like Batman show. It's just like, where are the anarchists?
They're at the container store.
Coney Island.
The anarchists are at the container store getting containers for bricks.
They're reading up at the factory by the boardwalk.
It's, you know, it's there's just so much stuff happening. And sorry for the noise in the background. It's like, my next door neighbor is redoing his place.
We don't actually hear anything. You have you have like a West Coast update for us, because LA has actually had a 1 p.m. curfew,
dude. Yo, so on Monday, today's Thursday. Yeah, on Monday, when you know when the protests made their ways to Beverly Hills and West Hollywood. And even people who aren't from LA, haven't been here, know the significance of a neighborhood like Beverly Hills. It's internationally known as a very moneyed, affluent area of LA and of America, right? It's a symbol of American wealth. And the protests took their asses over there, you know? And the curfew is literally one reason. It's if we see you on the streets, we issue the curfew. You know what the curfew is. We get to do whatever the fuck we want with you. Right. And so in the neighborhoods of Beverly Hills and West Hollywood, another more affluent, fancy neighborhood in L.A., the police instituted a 1 p.m. curfew so that if they saw anyone walking the streets at that time in those specific neighborhoods, they could essentially, they had carte blanche. That's the point of a curfew, is to signal to everybody like, all right, if your ass ain't in the house, it's like your parents' curfew. It's literally the same thing. If your ass ain't in the house by sundown, I'm on you. And that's the NYPD, excuse me, that's the LAPD, the police telling us, I'm on you. If I see you past a certain time, I'll do whatever it is I think is necessary to you. And so, yeah, they instituted a 1 p.m. I think it was 1:30. I don't want to get
I didn't know. Okay. All right. I don't want to get ahead of myself here. I
mean, yeah. This is the left. Yeah. Always exaggerating.
Yeah. So hysterical.
But yeah, they did that. They did that. And to be honest with you, Mike, you know, I look on the internet and see that they're protesting in Beverly Hills. I'm like, man, yo, like, this is real. This is actually pointed. This is actually focused. You know, my man Chuck Pierce always says, people always say all these things about Occupy Wall Street. At least they were yelling at the right buildings.
Right.
Right? Like, at least they knew exactly who was the cause of everything. We see a lot of protests in our country. You know, not too long ago, people were mad that they had to wear masks and couldn't get haircuts at their barbershop. Right. And that's what Chuck Pierce means when he says, at least they were yelling at the right buildings. You know, these people went to Beverly Hills, man. Like, these are the people who have the biggest voices in our communities, straight up and down. You know, if the fire department gets a call that something in Beverly Hills is on fire, they're there in a second. You know, if the police think something in Beverly Hills is in danger, they're there in a second. These are our most protected citizens, and the protest took it right to their front door. And the cops said, we're going to put a curfew on them so that we can handle them how we like to handle people.
When you look at, like, the way just de Blasio and Carchetti, these two liberal mayors, right? And President Obama was out last night doing a stream, and, you know, and he said people should vote. And I do, and to be very clear, I absolutely think, of course, people should vote. This is not some, like, dumb don't vote thing. Of course you should vote. Absolutely. I want to ask a deeper question than that, because it seems to me Carchetti – or Garcetti has been done things like shut down COVID testing clinics, which seems to me like absolutely a way of punishing the city.
Right.
De Blasio has been pathetic and servile and justified, you know, police ramming cars into crowds, but he seems legitimately scared to me. And I don't, and, you know, in general, maybe it is because he's just kind of like a feckless guy. But what, you know, if we look at this whole thing as a democracy deficit, that police can go into certain places and have their way, basically, with no democratic accountability and oversight, that really this becomes just a question of whether, you know, the age-old question of America democracy or not democracy, but then it's like blown out into this. And you, I don't know, it's like, I get that these mayors are looking out for obviously the centers of capital and indulging the cops is something that has always polled well overall, but they seem like they genuinely don't have rein on these like paramilitaries that are walking around our streets. Like, even if they wanted to, I guess is what. What do you think?
I'm not trying to be hyperbolic here. I'm saying this. I'm just prefacing that so people don't get alarmed. But I really think these guys are acutely aware of the fact that the cops will get you killed. The cops can get you killed. They can get you killed if you're Eric Garcetti, if they want to. If they're the people in charge of your own security, they could do the opposite if they wanted to. And I think that's the fact that they're all acutely aware of. It's that Mayor de Blasio, when he moves around with the police. When Mayor Carchetti moves around with the police. And so just think about the things that the cops are capable of doing when they're the ones policing themselves. They're the ones who have access to the information of actual crimes. And so that in order to recreate a crime, an actual crime, I know exactly how to do that because I know exactly how crimes take place. I think that's what you see from those guys. They're afraid of the police because they know the police can do harm to them in ways that are untraceable, in ways that, quite frankly, if you're a black person, you are acutely aware of yourself. You know what the cops can do to you. They can punch you in the face and say he was put on a report. He was resisting arrest. And then when you go to court, the document, the official document of the guy that punched you in the face says you were resisting arrest, right? That's the system. That's how it works. And those guys are very aware of how the system works, and they're very aware of the violence that these guys are capable of. That's my interpretation. And it's just an interpretation. People can, you know, have their own feelings and thoughts about it and their own hypothesis. But that's just, there's no other way to explain it. It's no different than when guys occupy the office of the presidency and they're afraid to bust a move against the military. And it's because of what, Mike? They're like, man, these guys can make it so that something goes terrible overseas, something goes terrible at home, and they can just blame me for it.
Right.
And so you see this deference to the military apparatus. You see this, oh, we can only talk about the military in one way, because they're scared, because these people know where the bodies are buried, quote unquote. And I think that's what you're seeing here, man. Like the police business is a violence business. You know, they carry guns. They have the authority to bust your, split your skull open, you know, at a whim, you know, just at their own whims. And I think even a mayor is very aware of that. And so that's why you see that level of deference.
Definitely. I want to play this clip for you because it's kind of like on this theme of democracy and policing. Guys, can we play this Tucker Carlson thing that this guy put together? Sam and I were talking about this yesterday, how Tucker Carlson, when he's out fear-mongering and trying to incite an authoritarian response from the president and, you know, freaking his audience out, he had this line yesterday where he was like, you know, if we don't have law and order, then it will just be like violent men with no accountability, violent men with guns with no democratic accountability. And it was like, right. And thank you. You described that dynamic very well, Tucker. I don't know who this guy is, and I hope you guys are hearing me as I'm saying this. I think this is clip number 2 or 3. But Johnny Heatwave did this cut up that I wanted to play for you, Oz, and then I wanted you to respond to it because I think this is very well. I guess also I should always warn, I guess, you know, obviously all of this footage is disturbing. But let's play this clip of this mashup with Tucker's commentary. And the guy who did this again is, I think it's at Johnny Heatwave is the creator. This is really, 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 really smart.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. First, they smashed the windows and our elected leaders said nothing. Before long, it grew. Mobs of menacing young men formed in the streets. They were clearly intent on violence, but no one in authority dared criticize them. And so the mobs grew larger and they grew emboldened. They did this in the name of justice. Still, our leaders did nothing. Most of them never even mentioned it, like it never happened. Did you watch that? How many more nights like this can we take? Who will enforce the laws? Who will be in charge? Well, violent young men with guns will be in charge. They will make the rules, including the rules in your neighborhood. They will do what they want.
I can't breathe.
You will do what they say.
Fucking stupid! Shut up!
I can't!
That shit don't work here!
No one will stop them. You will not want to live here when that happens.
Man. Oh, my goodness. Wow. Wow. Man. Sorry. I'm having a moment here because.
I'm sorry.
Because, like, what he's describing is literally. Again, I'm somebody who grew up in New York City, Queens specifically. You know, I was fortunate enough, you know, because of my high school, I was able to move through the different worlds of Queens, New York. meaning, so I grew up in a neighborhood called Queens Village, bordering Hollis, Queens, world famous, Run DMC, LL Cool J, Tribe called Quest up the block, where it's nobody would describe Queens Village as a violent place, as a place where you walk out your house and you think you're in some level of danger or threat from anybody. Did violent things happen there? Yes. But nobody would call it violent. Nobody. Nobody who lives there. And I'm not talking about somebody like me. I'm talking about my own mother would never say, yeah, this place is scary or dangerous. But the way we got policed is different from when I would say I was going to a classmate of mine to do a science project in high school. Like, the way they got policed was different from how we got policed. It just was. What Tucker Carlson was describing with this idea that scary rioters and looters are going to take over your neighborhood. Bro, that's the cops when you live in a black neighborhood. They do what they want, how they want, when they want. Something as small and menial as, you know, drinking a beer on a Saturday afternoon in the summer or spring. What we call the boys in blue, because when you grow up in certain neighborhoods, you learn to make distinctions between plain clothes detectives and the boys in blue, the uniform cops. Plain clothes detectives, they're essentially looking for guns, massive amounts of cocaine or heroin.
They're theoretically doing an actual job.
Job.
Right. Like, they're doing like what that's a cop, right? Like, yeah. Okay, so therefore all this other stuff that you could send in a social worker or just leave people alone, that's the boys in blue.
That's the boys in blue in New York City. Right. You nailed it. You landed it. If you are 1 foot off of your porch, these guys, if they happen to be rolling around, they'll come and give you a summons. They'll come and tell you, get on your porch. They'll come and tell you, again, a block that you live on, that you or a family member owns that property, this community that you, everybody who's congregating in that area has made together, has decided that this is cool that we do this. The cops will come and they'll say, get back on your porch, or they'll give you a summons, or God forbid, you have a warrant from your last drinking off your porch summons, and they'll take you to central booking, literally handcuff you, take you to central booking. So you can see a judge that'll tell you, all right, time served. That ticket you got, you don't have to pay for it. You don't have to do anything. So you just spent 12, 13 hours of your life to do that because a police officer wanted to do that to you. That's one example of policing. And then there's neighborhoods like Bayside, Middle Village, places in Queens that I've hung out in because I have friends that live here. And I watch how the police them when they're enjoying themselves, celebrating in a community fashion. And it's the complete opposite. It's the, hey, what's up, guys? How you guys doing? It's the, all right, yeah. I know your name. I know who you are. I do this every day. I understand that you guys are just sort of enjoying each other's company with a beer, with a bottle of whatever on your block in your own neighborhood, and nobody cares about the letter of the law in this instance. Go ahead with your bad self. Go do what you do. That's a fact. That's a fact. What Tucker Carlson is describing is the reality of, I can only speak to black life when you live amongst the police. That's what they do. I can give you another example, Mike. And this is actually funnier than harrowing, but it speaks to the boys in blue and what we call DTs, detectives dynamic. One time, and you actually know a day was the first one of my friends with a car. He had a Mitsubishi Diamante, a gold one.
Let's see that.
And we would pile into his car in the summer to go to parties, to go enjoy ourselves. Everybody understands if you live in New York, the summertime is the most important time of the year. It's when you cash the check of living in New York. It's when it all becomes worth it. The rats, the overpopulation, the NYPD.
The snow turns to slush like midair.
The summertime is when it all becomes worth it in New York. Like, you get your money's worth in the summertime. I can remember us, four of us, piling into a day's car. Each of us who wasn't a day, who's driving, having a 40 ounce of Old English in our hand as we're drinking a driving drink to the next spot. And before we pulled out of the spot, the DTs was on us. And I'll never forget what they said. They said, listen, somebody got shot not too far from here. We don't care about your weed. We don't even care about your coke. We definitely don't care about whatever liquor you're drinking in this car. We're looking for a weapon. Go ahead, do your thing, officer. They found no weapons, obviously. And again, the 40s, the weed that was in the car.
Because they had an actual job to do.
Yeah, I'm telling you, Mike. Right. I'm telling you. Like, it was a revelation. And again, I'm 33 years old now. I had to be like 19. So this had to be like 14 years ago. Not decriminalized weed or not right. that you can't drink right, in your right, car. Right. And not that you should be drinking a 40 in the backseat of a car when you're going anywhere. I would never tell you to do that.
But that being said, but this is the other point. Like, you're 19. I mean, this is the other thing of, like, the consequences, depending on where you live or your race, of just doing dumb shit.
Dumb
like,
shit.
Sure, you shouldn't do, but that right. shouldn't cost you time in prison.
Right, right.
Or your life.
And these guys literally went about their way. They didn't right. care. And the problem with that, Mike, is that you learn that there are things that are actually important and they're not being focused on by certain individuals in the police force. And why is that? Like, it doesn't take a huge leap to start making that calculation of like, damn. So you mean like this shit doesn't actually matter? Like, drinking on your, like, in front of your house doesn't mean anything when the same dudes from that police force with a different job title essentially told me to my face, like, we don't care about that shit. And we're cops. We're cops.
We're actually, we're higher cops. right.
Like, we got pulled over before we pulled off and nothing happened. You know, like, they were doing, like you said, a job. It's crazy, man. It's crazy. And people always talk, like, the way people talk about, like, if you're a pro cop, the way they talk about it, it's like, oh, something might happen and blah, blah. I'm like, yo, nothing will ever happen to the cop where justice isn't served. Nothing will ever happen. A crime will never be committed against a police officer and the person who committed that crime isn't gotten for it. Like, meaning you performed the crime, we caught you, you're done. That's not the case for police officers. That's what, if you are pro, be pro cop, but if you're pro cop, you're pro the rules being abided by. When police officers get to behave in an indiscriminate fashion towards their citizens and nothing happens, that is different from anything that ever happens to police. It's different. Police officers get to commit crimes and not pay for them. Period. They get to break your neck. They get to ruin your crib. They get to do, they get to do whatever they want to do. And nobody does anything about it. That's why people are upset. That's why people are upset. It's a lot, man. It's a lot, Mike. Like, it's a lot. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a lot. It's a lot with the cops. And I happen to know black cops in the NYPD. And, you know, I'm going to sound biased when I say this, but the best cops are black. Not that there aren't bad black cops, but the best cops are black. I can remember talking to a cop after, and I forget the gentleman, the two gentlemen's names, the Asian cop who ran into the East New York Project building and the homie who died smoking weed,
Oh, wait, this happened a couple years ago. You want to tell, remind everybody about that? That's important.
I'm going to tell you what happened.
Okay, please.
Two homies in the pink houses in East New York. And for those of you who don't live in New York, East New York and Brooklyn doesn't have bike paths. It doesn't have artisanal coffee and pastry shops.
Right.
It's not what you think of when people think of what we affectionately call the new Brooklyn. It's Brooklyn still. These two guys were smoking weed in the hallway of their building, what is referred to as the pink houses. I don't even know the official name of the pink houses. It's just, if you're from Brooklyn, you know what the pink houses are in East New York. Notorious neighborhood. And this Asian cop comes in, guns are blazing, kills this dude, shoots this guy smoking weed in his hallway in his building. He got killed, literally smoking weed that is now decriminalized in New York City. He wasn't doing anything wrong, okay? But you have a rookie cop, you have a very young cop, new cop, and the reason why I mentioned that this dude is Asian, he's not from the pink houses. And in fact, if he's Asian, he's from a neighborhood where no black people live. He's never had contact with black people. And why that matters is not that black people are special. He doesn't have a cultural context. Right? But the NYPD sends this homie to the pink houses.
Right.
That's where they send this guy. A rookie. He has no idea where he's at and what he's doing.
He's 24, 23 years old.
Yeah. That's where the NYPD sent him, okay? And I'm talking to a cop, and I don't want to divulge anything besides that, and he's explaining to me, and this is a cop who now made detective. He's a detective now in NYPD. And he's explaining to me, he's like, first thing he did wrong, you don't walk into a situation with your finger on the trigger. There's training that tells you. You don't have your gun out. Where you come, that's the first thing he did wrong. Second thing.
He's probably so scared from all the records he listened to or whatever he thought was going to happen.
Mike, he is scared shitless.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, when they sent him to the pink houses, they explained to him, like, this area is dangerous. These people are blah, 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 blah. And you know what this cop told me? He was like, bro, in order to be a good cop, you have to think like a perp. You have to walk like a perp. You have to know who a perp is. The fact that you think a perp is smoking weed in his project hallway, just chilling, waiting for you to come arrest them, you don't understand the actual perp. You don't know the perps. You don't know the actual criminals. You can't delineate between a regular citizen and somebody who's committing actual crimes against the community. You can't think like a perp. This Asian homie who they sent into the pink houses, like, and Mike, why did they send him to the pink houses and not black cops? Because they know the black cops are going to treat these people humanely. They're not going to rack up summonses and tickets and fines. So we don't want those people there. We want to rack up money.
Because it's a revenue source. That's the whole – when the Justice Department study of Ferguson came out, one of the things, in addition to all of the thousands of brutalities and civil rights violations they found was basically the way that city worked was like, okay, there is this nice part of Ferguson, and the whole tax base is supplemented by terrorizing – the black part of town for fines and for tickets. I mean, it's an actual revenue source.
it's like when you really consider the totality of it, like NYPD, the crazy shit, and man, we got to be honest on Majority Report. When I see rhetoric about defund the police, I'm like, guys, you know, as much as support we got, white people did not wake up yesterday no longer liking the police. Wait, as much support as we got, that is nowhere close to being the case. But related to the defund the police thing, is like the NYPD, the standards of becoming an NYPD police officer is basically you haven't committed a felony and you have a high school diploma.
Right.
Which means if you want to be a cop, you can be a cop. We'll give you a gun and a badge tomorrow. Do your little academy training. And listen, it's not the worst paying job in the world. They have money to fund this shit. And so you got to think policing what people like me call the greatest city mankind has ever known. That's the barrier or the hurdle. There is none. You can police this city that we claim to be the greatest city on earth. Whoever you are, doesn't matter. And we will send you to East New York. And you have basically, like, that shit in East New York was so egregious. And, you know, the dynamic between black people and Asian people in New York is a complicated one. Obviously, white people are to blame for it, but, like, it's a complicated one. It's a complicated one. It's, if you're Chinese or Korean in New York or even Los Angeles, like, you know, people don't understand this because they think of Asians as the model minorities. It doesn't mean that you grew up with some type of means.
Of course not. That's a ridiculous. I mean, that's a some whole type of barrier. Yeah. Right.
It's not that, you know, we associate Asian people with a certain level of just having money, and that's just not the case always. To the point where becoming a cop, like, that's not something you do when you have access to a lot of means, when you're non-white, okay? When you're white, becoming a cop is sort of like a duty to protect your people and your whiteness. Yeah, duh. When you're non-white and you become a cop, it's not because you came from something with means, you know? And so this homie has his own complicated background and history and upbringing, and he gets sent to East New York. You know, and that shit, again, was so egregious that everybody had to stand up and say, and he even got charged. He even went to court again. He got off, which, you know, another thing that people don't want to say, justice has been served. The four honkies got charged. It's, well, they're not all honkies.
Yeah, it's not all honkies. But don't keep pushing on that.
You know, but yeah. And justice has been served. Go home. They've been charged. Get charged. I mean, shit. Rodney King should have taught you that 30 years ago. They're being charged don't mean nothing. These homies might probably get off for it. That's the other shoe that always drops way later when the people hit the streets. All right, we pacified them. We're going to take them to court. We're going to do this. Now you're seeing, yo, that homie had corona. Yo, this homie had pre-existing. This homie, man, it might not have been the cops' fault. Like, you see the shit over and over again. And the Asian homie got off. And, you know, that's the weird shit about all of this, Mike, is it turns you into people who otherwise wouldn't feel this way, seeking, you know, just penalties.
Right.
We want to
throw them under the jail. I would never say that about anything. And then these situations turn you into those people.
Right.
Not that the Asian homie should have got thrown under the jail, but something should have happened to him.
He needed to have something. No, because he was. Something. I mean, it was in a systemic sense also unfair to him. It was ridiculous that he would be deployed there. But at the same time, obviously, it wasn't the type of thing where you could say, like, okay, that was a mistake. You should not have done that. But you're young. You don't know. You're scared. He murdered somebody. Like that.
Somebody died. That,
yeah, somebody died for sitting and smoking a blunt. Do you – so I guess just to take it on the political level or policy level for a second, for a few minutes. Like, I agree with you. I think that it's really fluid. And if you look at the poll numbers, they're all over the place. Like, you know, a majority of Americans say they support the protests, but then also one poll said a majority wanted the military deployed.
A majority said they were somewhat supportive of the police precinct being burned in Minneapolis also, which is just crazy.
That's a lot. So I like my favorite part of that is somewhat.
That was the option. Like fully, was firing the precinct fully justified, somewhat justified, partially justified?
And yep,
over 50% said, you know, partially was.
Well, that's because, yeah, so that was a good – so, look, and then even today, like, or yesterday, there was a poll, an Emerson poll, that said something like trust and not trust of police was basically, like, 42-39, which that's an insane number. Like, we're talking about all this, you know, reality and I'm, you know, obviously if you're – Black, if you're from different backgrounds, of course you have a completely different relationship to police and democracy. But at the same time, like these just large aggregate numbers turning like this, that is unprecedented. So I do think, and they're out rampaging on the streets. They're shooting rubber bullets at, you know, news networks. They're shooting rubber bullets at, you know, a pregnant woman in the passenger seat. Like now, I think right now, as we said in the beginning, they don't care because now they're just in the, like, you know, they're not in the take the knee propaganda phase. They're in the we'll beat the hell out of you, get home, don't ever defy our authority phase. And obviously that's extraordinarily dangerous and disturbing on any number of levels. But I guess my point is like, I still don't have a lot of time you know, for sloganeering that I think most people won't understand, but I also think the situation is fluid. And I do think all of a sudden, in addition to things that are so disgusting, they're not already on the books, but like, okay, sure. Yes. Let's pass a package that bans various tactics, that gets rid of immunity, that does, like, you know, basic civil rights stuff that's been stalled and needs to happen in a concrete, specific package. But also, I don't know. I think there are a lot more New Yorkers today that would say, wait a second, $6 billion? Like, why can't we – what? Like, what? Like, $6 billion to, like, beat the hell out of me on a bike? And now I have a taste of what – you know, East, New York faces every single day. And also the complications like inside the departments, because I don't think attitudes about police, like, you know, as I said, I think, and I'd love if you could talk about your experience at Penn State too, but I think there's a lot of varieties like of opinion about police. I think there's poor people of every background that have been aggressively policed. I think there's definitely, you know, upper middle class people of color of all backgrounds who are more supportive. I think there's kind of like, you know, the downwardly mobile PMC millennials that are, you know, really fired. Like they're listening to the NWA. So there's a lot of different moving pieces, but I think that right now, there is an opportunity that did not exist 2 weeks ago to get in, to get a defund or get a, wait a second, why can't we cut that budget by 50, 60%? last thing, and redeploy it to social work, to education, even along the lines of the distinction you made in the beginning, which I think is really smart. Because I think intuitively people say, like, wait a second, it's not that much, but there is, like, actual crime that exists at times.
And Mike, whenever they do their bitch-ass strikes, when they're like, we're not gonna
talk about it.
Get the people that walk through subway cars today. Nothing happened.
Dude, de Blasio had such an opportunity. They went on this strike. They were like, Bill de Blasio said racism's bad, so we're not going to crack people's skull for drinking a Budweiser anymore. And they didn't do any of it for weeks. The people were not getting harassed for subway jumping, for drinking a beer, for all of the broken window stuff that's used to terrorize people of color and the underclass of this city. They didn't do it for weeks. And guess what happened? Serious crime continued to plummet. And if Bill de Blasio had any chutzpah,
if he had nuts.
So I would have sat there. Could you imagine, Waz, if you were mayor, you might have been like, guys, I don't know why you're convincing me that over half of your job is
a that I need to fire y'all.
I don't understand.
Like, I don't need you.
Yeah. Apparently.
The crazy shit, Mike, because again, like, I went to school with these people, and by these people, I mean white New Yorkers who became working class New Yorkers. On my Facebook, I distinctly remember, and man, I'm not going to say his name, but he's somebody who...
Yeah, no names, no names.
I was very close to when we were in high school. We played football together. We ate lunch together. Everything I know about this guy is he is one of the most decent people you will ever meet in your life. But he's a cop. And I remember when the little strike happened, and I just remember the half-hearted nature of his Facebook post. Of his, well, you know what? We're all going to do this thing of not writing piss in public summonses. And we're going to show you.
Aren't you embarrassed to do that in the first place? Aren't you embarrassed to do that in the first place?
It's, bruh. And I remember thinking, like, wait, police not going to do that for a few days? And I remember watching it. Because their whole thing was like, you guys wait and see when we don't do what we do every day. Life went on without y'all, bruh. Life went right on. Everybody went to work. Everybody was miserable still about their jobs and their lives. Everybody freaking ate street meat and dirty water hot dogs. Everybody did the New York thing without y'all. New York will run just fine without you guys. I promise. I just remember that because I remember seeing him and I was like, yo, why? Why is he? And then I'm like, he's a cop. He has to come do the solidarity thing. And I just remember thinking, wait, this is your answer is to not write summonses? Whew. NYPD got to pray.
They had no, I mean, but that's just, and that, well, not also, because that was the last debunking of broken windows, right? Because the first thing that you described was, okay, broken windows. And just real quick, the theory of broken windows is like, no, if you don't do the little stuff, then that creates an environment for the big stuff. So if you thought about it rationally for a minute, that would make very limited sense. Like, okay, I see this guy, like, he's smoking a joint. So now I feel permission to commit an arson. Like,
yeah,
it actually, if you analyze it a little bit, sounds kind of ludicrous. But that was the theory. And then, of course, what you described in the beginning, though, is like, where are we going to do broken windows policing in black neighborhoods? And then, oh, okay, you're there's a permissive environment here. You're having a barbecue, you're drinking a beer on the street, you know, hey Bob, how you doing? And then, so we already knew that, but then when they did this strike, that was the final nail in the coffin of all of those arguments. All of it.
Like, nobody needs you. Like, nobody needs you. And, you know, the thing is, if you live in Whitestone, Queens, and believe me, those people love the police. because they believe that the police are saving them from the crime that happens in Southside Jamaica. Guys, like, no black people are coming up to your neighborhood and committing crimes. It's not happening. Most black people don't even know where Whitestone is, guys. The support that props this shit up is just, it's this just latent white fear amongst native white New Yorkers. That's another thing that I try to evangelize, honestly, Mike, about New York City. Because again, I'm from there and I know these people and I grew up with these people. There's this idea of New York as this liberal bastion of this place where you go to be artistic, to be diverse, to be, and guess what? New York is all of those things, but it's not just those things. The people in New York, I'm going to use an example of the city of Cleveland, Ohio, which is becoming more red by the day. It's because of a place like New York. People in Ohio who think like you and I, Mike, don't want to stay in Ohio.
Right.
So where they go is places like New York, LA, San Francisco, Austin, Texas, all of these signposts of art, of liberalism, of humanity, of people. But the fact remains that if you are a native white New Yorker, you are conservative and reactionary as fuck. That's who they are. That's who props up the support for NYPD. When Eric Garner got choked to death by three cops in Staten Island, and I cite this stat all the time, citywide disapproval for what happened was at 68%. Citywide, when you count the five boroughs, citywide, people saw that and was like, which again, 68%, me and you would be like, wow, Jesus, we can't get that to like 88 or something?
Yeah, we can't get the public like, choking out and murder of a guy who I guess was selling Lucy. Maybe we could bump that up a little bit.
He was sidebar, Mike, I tell people this all the time. The Eric Garner shit hit me because I'm somebody who used to buy loose cigarettes. I'm a Lucy consumer. And I'm like, yo, they killed the dude for selling Lucy's? That stayed with me for a while. But whatever. Citywide, disapproval, 68%. On Staten Island, where that crime happened, which is a majority native white, it's all native white New Yorkers live on Staten Island, 70% approval. Okay? Like, could you even, like, can you fathom that? 70% of the citizens of Staten Island said the police did their job correctly.
By murdering this man in public.
Bruh.
And just
choking him out in public.
He wasn't actually selling Lucy's that day either, if memory serves.
Yeah, the reporting is that, no, he wasn't. It was like a long-term interaction of harassment by those cops specifically of him.
And he's actually, like, I'm not taking this shit today.
Yeah, Matt Taibbi's book about this is real good.
Yeah, it's great.
I Can't Breathe. That's reported very, very, very well. I mean, but also I would like to, I think too though was that that's 100% right. But also I think in the abstract, you can't actually, there's that old layer of just, like they used to call it like the Nixon ethnic whites reactionary, you know, racist Staten Island police, La Costa Nostra, whatever.
Hold on. Somebody in the chat said, obviously we're being loose with the term native. My bad, yes, but you get what I'm trying to say.
All right. Sorry. You know what? Usually those kind of comments are going to eye roll from me, but that was done in a funny and correct way.
Sorry, continue.
No, I'm just saying, but on the other hand, like, I think in the abstract, like, the specific fear of, like, affluent white racism, like, oh, they're going to come to my neighborhood is just delusion, poison, and racism. And then in the abstract sense, like in terms of like even what these cities are now and the contradiction of like, yeah, like these are bastions of liberalism, which are built on a found, like you can't have artisanal coffee New York where it is and how it happens without Giuliani and Bloomberg terrorizing people and without the economic forces that gentrified neighborhoods and without the policing tactics that,
that gentrified neighborhoods
that terrorize. So even so there's so many people who like discourse liberal, and I'm not making it about, because again, like I look at things in that, in a Marxist way, in the, it's not about people's personal morality to me at all, but it's like actually the context upon which that sort of like idyllic upper middle class, you know, oh, this is progressive city life, is actually totally inseparable from the coalition of the real estate industry and policing to destroy neighborhoods, uproot people from their homes, and truly systemic police violence, like the everything you outlined in the beginning.
Man, that's another thing that gets underrated about gentrification, specifically as it pertains to New York City, is the cops are basically vendors hired in service of the process.
Yes.
Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn. Bed-Stuy, Do or Die. Where Do the Right Thing was filmed. What Do the Right Thing is about is basically a white neighborhood now, for all intents and purposes. And there's so many interesting things happening. When I lived in New York, I got to watch gentrification in real time because a friend of mine actually moved from, he bought a condo in Bed-Stuy 10 years ago. And it, 'cause he's like, I got some advice that basically this is going to be worth something soon. And so I have money to buy something. I'm going to buy it here because I'll be able to sell this for way more than I'm paying for it now because of what the process that's happening there. And Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn is so interesting. It fascinates me, Mike, because we talk about integration in this country in the mainstream all the time. And this is like the reverse of what we normally talk about, of like letting black people live what white people do. Whereas this is like white people. And another component of it that's not talked about it enough is that many of the yuppies are also black.
Like, black, not ignore the class dimension of it.
Yeah.
Class is at the center of it. Yes.
Like black yuppies also moving to Bed-Stuy. And how is that happening? They turn it into a police state.
Yep.
Literally, the cops now live here. Why? It's because you could commit crimes, but not against my white people. No, we're not going to let you commit crimes against my people. We're not going to let you commit crimes against my fucking people. You know, and that's what you see in these neighborhoods in Brooklyn and Bed-Stuy specifically, because it's like the cops are freaking everywhere. And it's basically so that the new white people that are getting everybody out of here can feel safe.
Yep.
That's it's not hard to understand. If you talk to somebody who grew up in Bed-Stuy, they're like, nah, there was never police here. They would never do the fucking floodlight shit where, like, if something bad happens on your block, the police will literally bring a floodlight, like their own light that's not a street light, park it on that area. And so then it's basically like we have a magnifying glass and a light shown on this block all day. Every single day. There's a cop car here every day. Like, this block is an occupied territory of the NYPD right now. And all in service of turning this into a place that's desirable to white people.
Right. Can you talk real quick, just in like the last couple. I mean, I want to get your final thoughts in a second, but first, because you did mention the class dimension of it too, can you talk about the guys you met at Penn State and
man,
that how that even like the whole other dimension of that to this as like, because it to me when I hear that, it also just it underlines the structure overall, but also like the potential of building out, you know, maybe that really that coalition possibly to actually really, you know, make serious budget cuts, make serious changes and whatnot.
Obviously my background is that I'm from New York, Brooklyn and Queens specifically. My parents are immigrants. They moved to New York in the 70s from Haiti. That's my background. It's New York. It's Haitian immigrant. That's who I am, right? I go to Penn State when I'm 18 years old, right after high school, and I move into a suite with four other people, three of which are guys from Central Pennsylvania. I don't know anything about Pennsylvania before moving to Penn State. I just know Philadelphia, essentially. These guys are from Central PA, and they're not from like some type of quasi city. They're from a town. They're from a place where
from a town,
like literal dirt roads. Like there's actually dirt roads in the place that they live. Like I went to one of my homies' cribs. Like we drove down a dirt road to get to his pappy's house, like straight up. And meeting these homies in. This is the and another thing that you got to realize when you're a black person in New York, you don't interface with poor white people ever. Right. Ever. The concept of the poorest white people are working class, union job having white people.
Right.
That's the poorest who will make probably six figures. By the time they reach top pay and OT and all of that, they will own a home. They will be upper crust, sorry, like in America, like you are, you made it. You're an American who made it, and you are the poorest white person in New York. So I personally never met a white person who was doing worse than me until I moved to PA, until I moved in with these kids who I think I brought like six pair of sneakers with me. And they were like, man, you got a lot of shoes. These are white boys telling me that. These are homies who their disdain for the police, you wouldn't imagine. Because in their town, they're not the – there's a couple of people who are well-to-do in their town, and they're not that. And they get treated like that. And as a matter of fact, the cops know their family, know their dad, where he works, know their mom, where she works. Basically, know their class situation. And they get treated like that. And they use terms like pigs. And they use terms like narcs to describe people who might call the police. And they use terms like snitch. And these are poor white people, you know? And I'll tell you this, when you talk about coalition building, Mike, I remember coming home from, I think it was Thanksgiving break, and my mom, because she knows I'm not getting Haitian food and cooking and all of that stuff, sent me with a gang of shit. And we had a system at the house where, you know, if there's food in the fridge, it's for everybody. That was our system. Me and these working class, white background, white homies. And I bought all this Haitian food. Like, I'm talking about, man, type of shit where I wouldn't even offer it to my Trinidadian homie. Because it's like, bruh, I don't know if you're ready for this, my boy. Mike, when I tell you these homies dogged this food, they fucking bodied it. They went crazy. I brought home some pickles, which is like a Haitian garnish that you would put on fried food. It's whatever. I don't want to describe it, but whatever. And my mom was like, yeah, you bring that shit back over there so you can have some. Not only did these homies dog it, my one homie, he went home for a weekend because his house, New York City, was like 5.5 hours away. His house was like about 1.5 hours. He took some to his house. And he was like, me and my dad fucked this shit up. Next time you go to New York, make sure you can you please bring some back for me and my dad because my dad is crazy about this stuff. And I say all of that to say, like, these homies that I met in PA, in Penn State, in Pennsylvania, are the most down-home people I ever met. They remind me the most of my immigrant family members, people who grew up in Haiti, which is famously called the poorest place in the Western Hemisphere. They remind me the most of those people than literally anybody I've ever met before. You know, and it was just a revelation of just like meeting poor white people was like the concept of poor white people doesn't even enter your psyche in a place like New York. Right. Because in L.A., like the homelessness is such that there's a lot of poor homeless people and there's a lot of homeless white people. And so you get a sense that there are, but the only poor people in L.A. are homeless. Right?
There's no floor in L.A. Of course, there's poor neighborhoods, but I know what you mean. It's like L.A. is terrifying in that sense. Like, it's like, hey, you want to go to the yoga garden? Right. Well, look, there's a homeless or city there under the underpass.
Homeless city.
Yep.
Straight up.
Yep.
You know, and so it's very illuminating in... And by the way, that county, I looked it up, that those homies grew up at is Trump country.
Right.
Right. But I'm just telling you, whatever we think about people who love our president, people who we might call deplorable or whatever, that's where those homies come from. And they are anything but the stereotypes we might place on them. And you know, maybe I'm a pussy for being hopeful from that, but that's just the reality, bro. Like, I lived with these people. I lived with them. You know what I'm saying? Like, when I was calling my mom to send me $50, they were doing the same shit. Like, their experience, their lives mirrored mine in so many ways. And, you know, I just think... if the struggle is going to be made wholesale, that's the type of people we gotta change their minds, Mike.
Well, you're the best, man. I appreciate you guys. I appreciate you. And obviously, if you want to hear more of me and Waz, check out the bomb feed on BOMM on iTunes. But please, just follow. I mean, you can follow Waz on Twitter, and he's writing articles for The Athletic. He's hosting all sorts of great podcasts for The Athletic and Count the Dings. And, of course, you can also hear him regularly on TMBS with me. Waz, thank you, man.
Yo, man, I appreciate you guys. Matt, my boy, I love you guys so much. I appreciate what you guys are doing on a day-to-day, like the work and the commitment that you guys put into what you do. Is amazing. You guys inspire me every single day. I didn't know I was going to come on here and have this experience, but like, that's kind of like day to day today. I mean, nowadays, honestly. And yeah. So I just appreciate you guys, having me on, man. Like, it's so crazy what's happening outside and the work that you guys are doing on a day to day basis to help to, you know, like, use whatever you got to try to make shit better. I know because I make content myself. A lot of times it feels like you're speaking into the void, you know.
Definitely.
And you guys do this shit every
I'm just like are we ready to speak into the void again, Matt?
Like, are we actually doing anything? But I promise you guys, y'all are making a difference. And I love y'all. I appreciate y'all for that.
I love you, man. Thank you.
Back at your walls.
Stay later, safe. Guys. Stay safe. Be well. Whew. All right.
It's best of?
Best. Well, definitely. Definitely. I love that guy. Please do if you're just finding it. You will be rewarding yourself if you find Waz's work everywhere you can find it. I promise. Definitely. Including, I mean... the range on Hoops Adjacent, which, I mean, you know, obviously overall it's a really good basketball podcast, so I guess you have to be into basketball. But even the conversations they've had the last couple of shows on the police murdering and the racism and just – but I don't know how to describe it. there's a lot, everybody's talking about it and a lot of people are contributing good things, but there is just a quality to that conversation because of Waz and the fact that he's with David Aldrich. I don't know. That just,
I love
it. Just makes me really happy as a friend. And it's great. It's an excellent, excellent show.
Yeah. I listen to it first as soon as it hits my feed every single week.
Yeah. Yeah. It's probably the only one that I keep up with like that too. All right, so folks, we're going to go to the fun half. Let's do this real quick. Become a member of the Majority Report today. If you can, become a member. Definitely, of course, if you can, go to patreon.com/TMBS. We had a really good show with Matt Chrisman, Artesia Balthrop, and Chuka Ajekam. On Tuesday, we're doing a two-part illicit history of Pakistan coming up, and then next week, one on policy fixes to policing and a lot more with a really, 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 really insightful dude who Cedric Johnson. So patreon.com/TMBS. I've gotten some great recommendations of a couple of bail funds and frontline places that we're going to do some a little bit of a contribution to this month. We'll probably pick three or four places, including one in Kentucky, but still open for a few more suggestions. And so, yeah, that's it. Matt, what's up with Literary Hangover?
I'm funneling people over to twitch.tv/literary hangover. I will say, I didn't stream last night, but David Griskamen and I hit the high seas on Sea of Thieves with Dave from Jamaica. And we found We found quite a bunch of, quite a good amount of treasure. So I look forward to that in the coming weeks. We'll probably be doing that. So it was very exciting. A nice little escape from the police state that we're currently living under. So
it's also a great cat angle you have right now.
Yeah, sorry. I would kick my cat off, but he's been sick, so I feel bad about moving him. So he's
gonna. I like him.
Distracting, yeah.
I've actually met him. He's a nice guy. It's a little ornery, but he's a nice guy.
A little bit, yeah.
But that's a great angle. Jamie, you're here. What's up? How are you? Can't hear you.
Muted. One second. You're unmuted on Zoom, but your mic doesn't seem to be working.
She's not muted on Zoom?
No, she's not. I think she might be having a issue. We can, I can transfer the plug into,
Wait.
Okay, you're good. Go ahead. Go ahead. We got you.
My cats must have unplugged my mixer over here.
Really?
Yeah.
They have the capacity to do that?
The little one is very bad.
Yeah.
Very smart.
My kitten's annoying like that too.
She's That's very awesome. Creative at getting into shit. But yeah, I got a podcast. It's called The Antifada. We have a lot of content that we've been releasing lately and always. So the most recent episode, it went up yesterday. It is an episode with Sean and the boys, returning guest Andy Battle and David A. Banks. They talked about capitalist space, deunionization, deindustrialization, supply chains, gentrification, uneven development, and class struggle, and taking the streets. You know, just like a chill, nice episode with the boys. Also, we have our special Twitch stream now in podcast form for our patrons on the uprisings in Minneapolis and around the country with guests Cole James Cash of Ghetto News Network, Leslie Lee III of Struggle Session, and Rob Rousseau, that's out now for patrons. Also, Andy did a very good episode of Prolet Cult. He did a little update on Space Force and the privatization of space that has been occurring as the U.S. insists on treating space more like the American West, quote unquote, and less like an international commons available for all. Also, we are doing a 100th episode 100 this weekend. And we thought we would take some questions from listeners. So if you have any questions for us, you can tweet them at the Antifada or at me or email antifadamindset@gmail.com.
All right, everybody. We are going to go to the fun half. See you there.
left is best. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude.
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 You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457-2-38-56-27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Grandpa.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jab.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good. Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
You think I might be a Nazi?
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's. I want to just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me,
hey, shut up.
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.